So did anybody review like last week what we covered? We are discussing the fourth chapter, Bhagavad Gita. We covered like few verses, right? So what is like some of the summary points from the... Hare Krishna. Oh, you heard it, Prabhu?
I read of it.
Oh, okay. Hare Krishna.
Huh?
Okay.
How did you have access?
Ah, sure.
Need a hand?
Yeah. Huh.
Krishna begins with saying that he gave his knowledge to the sun god. And the first 10 verses are about the knowledge.
Yeah.
And so then Arjuna says that you are not contemplating, how come you are there? So he says, I was there before, and you were there before.
I remember all of them, but you will not.
But you don't, yeah.
Because? Why? Why Krishna remembers, but not us?
Because he is the Maya. Because he is ultimate love. He remembers everything for us.
But more specifically, like, you know, the.
Because he himself
spoke it. He doesn't change his body.
Okay. He doesn't change his body.
His mental body remains the same.
Remains the same, but because we change the body, the moment we change the body, we forget. So then. Okay, what else? Okay, so we covered till Mataji nicely summarized till 4.5. Then Krishna starts now describing about his transcendental qualities. From number 6, he says that, you know, his transcendental body never deteriorates. And he comes in his original transcendental form. So then Krishna, Prabhupada clarifies in the purport that he is like the Goloka Krishna, which is two-handed, holds a flute. That Krishna in his that original form, he descends. Then Krishna now comes to say why he descends, right? 7 and 8. So why does he come? There are three main reasons.
Yeah, to establish the dharmic principles and to get rid of all the dharmic ones.
Deliver the pious.
Yeah.
So there are three reasons. Yeah. But out of these, what is the main primary reason why Krishna comes? In the purport we discussed, right? Like to kill Kamsa, Krishna need not come.
Correct.
Right?
So he wants to establish his presence so that people remember his pastimes forever.
Okay, so mainly for his devotees. Yeah. To enliven, the devotees are so much eagerly hankering to see Krishna's pastimes.
Right.
So then he comes directly in order to perform his pastimes to attract their hearts more than, you know, to kill the yatis or, you know, kill the demons. Because that he can do with any, you know, a storm or any trick of Maya, these demons can be killed. But he so as a side effect, he achieves that. Okay, so 7 and 8 are done. So, and then conclusion 9 we covered?
No, starting
9. Okay. So then now Krishna gives the key as to, like, you know, one who knows about his transcendental nature, what benefit he is going to get. So that's like a great boon for us if we read and understand, gives us a lot of, you know, encouragement. So let's start with text number 9. Okay. It's okay?
Yes.
Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha yakta deham puram janma naiti mameti so Arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. So this is what Krishna is saying. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities. So Janma and Karma. So his appearance is also transcendental. Because as we discussed, right, it's not like how we are born. Right? Because he comes in his transcendental body and activities. Obviously, you know, his activities we can see, they're all superhuman and transcendental. So what happens to that person? Person, upon leaving that body, he will never again take birth in this material world. And what happens? He attains the eternal abode. So it's very nice, you know, this is what our goal is, right? We want to achieve this. So to do that, what we need to do? We need to absorb and understand Krishna's transcendental nature of his birth and his activities.
The eternal abode is the Golaka.
Golaka. I was listening to one lecture where one of Prabhupada's disciples was explaining about Krishna's birth. It was very, very intricate, very complex. This potency changed that potency, and especially, you know, the swapping of the babies, and it was the one we know itself is complex, but I think he went even more depth and more details. Hearing itself was mind-boggling. I don't know how he was explaining it, and then that's what actually the one thing I remembered from the hearing that lecture is that this statement which he made. He said, "So this is what Krishna means when he says, one who knows my transcendental appearance, you know, he will be delivered, because it takes whole life to understand, you know, how he is born. It's not like, you know, okay, I understand now Krishna is born, then I'm done." Because to understand or to, you know, realize, it takes whole lifetime. It's so complex and it's so transcendental that, you know, whole life you'll be meditating. Like, you know, I didn't figure this out. What happened after this? So you'll be thinking always, you know, like a mystery movie kind of thing. You'll be always intrigued and, you know, want to know more and more about Krishna, and you'll be absorbed in Krishna, and eventually at the moment of death you think of Krishna and go back. So that's the statement he made. You know, this is why Krishna. It's not so. That's why it's not easy.
I was thinking about just asking that question at the expense of sounding, you know, that's so simple. How come nobody does that, right? So.
Yeah, because it's not not easy also. Because we don't know what is the depth of that understanding. We think, okay, we know what is Krishna's appearance and activities, but there are more deeper understandings.
In everything, there would be a reason to it. We just take it as an event without understanding.
And also, you know, we understand it the way, how much ever we have realization about Krishna, that much we can understand his activities. Like, if we think of him as ordinary person, his activities also we think like, you know, my peer friend is doing it. Right? So, even though we hear the same pastimes and activities, but the more we have realization of Krishna and Supreme Personality of Godhead, these pastimes are more deeper. Okay, so we'll read some sections of the purport. The first, we'll start with the first one. The Lord's descent from his...
The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalist and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma Jyotir of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to this material world.
Yeah, we can pause there. So Prabhupada again emphasizes it's not easy to get free from this material bondage, because it's like one person is drowning, right? Only a person who's afloat can help him. So it's like that. So we are stuck in this material world, this bound by these three modes, so we cannot relieve ourselves. So that's why it's not easy, because every time, you know, we want to change one habit or something, we struggle, right? Because we're so much bonded. But then when a liberated person like spiritual master, somebody helps, or even Krishna, they can liberate us. So that's what Prabhupada is saying. Even impersonalists, you know, even though the so-called liberation they achieve, which is impersonal Brahman, they may have to come back. So liberation is not easy. But whereas simply, Prabhupada is making sound, you know, so easy, simply by understanding Krishna's pastimes, one can achieve that transcendental benefit and also have the benefit of not having returned back. So here, usually people ask one question. See here, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. Upon leaving the body, so take his birth again in this material world, right? Krishna is saying, you know, that person never takes his birth again in material world. But then free will is always there. Does that mean, you know, we will not again misuse the. So
you,
we
I want. Was going to ask that in a different way. I was thinking that there might be many people who went there and you know something would have happened and they got kicked out or
they were jealous, right? They were envious
yes,
of Krishna.
Yes.
So to go there, you need to be so clean and so pure before you can even think
right.
of going there.
Right.
But in
yes.
this, I mean,
so
you're referring to the translation where you say take birth again, right? But it says does not take birth, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So the question, no, the point I was trying to make is like, we are here means at one point we misused our free will.
Correct.
So when we go, Krishna is saying, okay, let's say if we understand Krishna's nature, we are going to go back to his abode. But what are the chances that we are not going to misuse the free will again and violate Krishna's promise saying, you know, never take birth again in this material world.
Mm. So we can misuse
that. We can, so free will is always there. It doesn't mean Krishna is taking away our free will, but it is like Prabhupada said, we remember this material experience like a bad dream and we don't want to go through it again. So even though we have the choice, we usually, mostly we will not make the choice.
Right.
Like once bitten, twice shy, like that. Okay. So we'll read the last paragraph.
I would think also that understanding the transcendental nature is more than an intellectual understanding.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
it's
yes. Yeah, it's devotion.
It's devotion.
Yeah, it's devotion. Krishna reveals, it's not, see the way we think about understanding is, you know, scholarly or rather ascending way, you know, I read it, I figure it out, right? No, okay, I got it, or no, the way academically we read, right? You know, if I have to solve some problem, go on the internet or read some book, ask some friend,
intellectually.
I'm figuring it out. But actually, spiritual knowledge is all about, you know,
being revealed
to us.
Yeah.
So Krishna has to reveal himself, his activities and so it is said that, you know, just by chanting the holy names, you know, Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela, everything will be revealed from within. First, the name will be revealed. Right now, we are chanting the holy name, but we don't know the potency of the holy name, that it's non-different from Krishna, all those things, right? So, the name itself will be revealed, that when we say Krishna, you know, we can feel Krishna's presence on our tongue. Okay, I don't have that realizations, but no, that's what Acharya said. So, first, the name will be revealed. Then Nama Rupa, Krishna's form will be revealed within the heart. Nama Rupa Guna, qualities, Krishna's qualities. And Leela, his pastime. So Acharyas, when they meditate on the holy, just by chanting the holy name, internally they are seeing Krishna's pastimes within their heart. Krishna is stealing the butter, Krishna is, you know, stealing the clothes of the gopis. All these pastimes are reenacted in their hearts. And they are also so purely in love with Krishna that they actually enter into the pastimes. So they leave this in the sense, you know, they have that existence of, you know, transcendental existence, and then they enter the pastimes and then return back again if needed. So, you know, these are all awaiting us. That's what our Acharya say. You know, we don't know the depths of what, you know, what we have been given actually. Just by chanting the holy name, we think it's so easy that we sometimes, you know, take it cheaply. Because that's why it is said to hear again and again the glories of the holy name. Okay, so we'll read the last paragraph. One can attain the perfect stage
of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently he will not attain salvation, simply so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection.
So again, Srila Prabhupada is affirming here that it's not about our own scholarship. It's not about our, that's the point we are making, right? It has to be devotion. So a person who doesn't know Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually in mode of ignorance, and the only way he can be saved is by the mercy of the devotees. Because we are all stuck in ignorance, the only way is somehow or the other some devotees entered into our lives and helped us, you know, connect to Krishna. Yeah, that's why actually, you know, we can have this prayer, especially once our kids were born. No, my services and activities, everything were different, right? Now it's different. So suddenly I was not able to connect to Krishna, because the way I was connecting to Krishna was through my services earlier, like whole day, whatever I was doing. So, but then now suddenly my activities and everything were different, right? I was not able to connect with Krishna. But it's all about our vision actually, you know, how we perceive things about our activities, right? So then I was praying, Krishna, let me see you. Let me see you in these services. Let me see you in these activities. So that means Krishna has to reveal how this service is connecting to him, right? I cannot artificially say, now this is for Krishna. Okay, I'm trying. Okay, initially we start with that mood. And hopefully, you know, we can meet Krishna down the lane. But if Krishna can show us, you know, this is how, this is my service, like, you know, service to me, then we will act with the realization. Instead of just like, you know, okay, this is my service, blindly go and do it. And suddenly, you know, consciousness changes and we don't even know it's no longer service to Krishna. It becomes like, you know, now it's all my ego, or, you know, somebody comes and fights and I give in. So we can have this prayer, you know, let Krishna, please reveal yourself to me at work. Please reveal yourself to me in my family, you know, how this is my service to you. How my, you know, taking care of my wife and children is a service to you. Theoretically, we know by maintaining them or somehow helping them become Krishna conscious is our service to Krishna. But to have that realization and to act with that realization, it's a very different thing.
Did you lose that?
Were
the people
no.
there?
No. Yeah, I think she's
still there,
yeah.
Okay, she's there.
Some pop. Okay. We'll go to the next verse. Text number 10. Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashrita bahavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magata. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So actually in this verse, Krishna is saying, in the earlier verse he said, one who knows transcendental nature of birth and activities, what happens? He attains eternal abode. But now Krishna is giving a deeper understanding. It's saying that one result of going beyond just knowing Krishna, let's say if somebody is absorbed in Krishna, initially the first verse is one who knows Krishna, he goes eventually, you know, at the end of his life he go back to spiritual world. But what Krishna is saying is, let's say in this life one is fully absorbed in me, what happens in this life? They will attain transcendental love for me. You got it? So this is much deeper than the earlier verse. The earlier verse, Krishna said, like, one who knows my birth and activities, they will, at the end of his life, they will come back to me. This verse, they are saying, if suppose one is absorbed in me in this life, then he will attain transcendental love for me in this life.
Even before death.
Yes. So while living, we can have pastimes with Krishna. So we need not wait for death to go and have pastimes with Krishna.
You don't have to what?
Wait for death in order to have a spiritual body, in order to exchange relationship with Krishna. We are doing text number 10.
So the first person has just the knowledge, and he second person has the full absorption.
He has knowledge, so as well as he's fully in devotion with Krishna. Okay, So then we'll come to, you know, what does it mean to be freed from attachment, fear and anger, and you know, Prabhupada elaborates that in a specific context. So we'll read some sections of the purport and understand that. And then I will summarize so that, you know, it all comes to one summary. So Krishna is giving example of previous people, how they have attained transcendental love. But main things Prabhupada focused on this purport is about these three factors: attachment, fear and anger. So let's read, these are like, you know, we are going to jump into different sections of the purport. So like after six or seven lines, it says, in the materialistic concept, the body is perishable.
In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the supreme to be impersonal.
We can pause there, Prabhupada. So this is the actually the first category, attachment. So in the materialistic concept, we can listen carefully. Actually, you know, it may be little complicated also. So we can carefully pay attention. So in the materialistic concept, there is attachment to the body, the materialistic way of life. With that attachment to the body, they also have the same concepts for the supreme. They think supreme is also, you know, like has a body like us, or that the supreme is impersonal. No, he doesn't have any features. Because of this, they neglect the spiritual life. They say, okay, there is nothing better than I have material body. Krishna also has material body. Why I should worship him? Right? So I will neglect my spiritual life completely. So this negligence of the spiritual life owing to attachment to the first factor, we are talking about the first one, right? In the translation, there were attachment, fear and anger. So we are talking about this attachment. So you can write in the translation if you want, this attachment is attachment to the body, material body. So because of this attachment to the material body, they neglect the spiritual life. So that's why they neglect to take shelter of Krishna. That's why Krishna is saying being freed from all of these. So let's see the other factors. So like continuing the purport, now Prabhupada is going to talk about the second factor, fear. And because they are too materially absorbed.
And because they are too materially absorbed, the concept of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void.
Yeah, we can pause there. That's the second one. So because they are so absorbed in the having a material body, and also sometimes many people have frustrations due to personal dealings. Sometimes, you know, relationship issues or something. And they would want to envision a life where they are impersonal, or rather, you know, I would rather not deal with any relationships at all. So when they are given this idea that actually, you know, even when you get liberated, you are a person and you have dealings with devotees, then they get scared. Okay, I don't want such a reality. So that's because of fear. So because of their frustration with the relationships in this material world, due to, you know, materialistic concept of life, when they hear that even in the spiritual concept there are individuality and there is relationships, they get scared. No, I don't want this identity. Because of that fear, they would rather take up impersonalism. So they are fearing spiritual identity. They would rather think, okay, everything is, you know, identity collapses. We all become, you know, merge into, like bubbles merge into water, like that.
Because the fear of spiritual identity is because they may come back. Is that the fear? Because it said when they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again.
Yeah, it's because of their past failure in relationships, frustrations. Like for example, the typical thing is like, you know, in college ages or something, somebody falls in love, right? and somehow love fails. Mm-hmm. Then sometimes, especially boys, right, they take it so much to the heart. That also, and they grow beard. Prabhu is telling, they grow beard and they say, you know, they will, or some people, you know, they become antagonistic towards any girl. Or some people say, you know, all girls are like that, so I'm never going to even marry anybody or, you know, deal with anybody at all. Because of the frustration, of the pain in that relationship, they don't even want to go through that again, any other relationships. Even suppose marriage also, like now once we experience the marriage, right, initially it's like, okay, grihastha ashram we should go through. But it is said that grihastha ashram is purposefully made that at the end of it, you have to have a realization that that's done. Okay, now next life I don't want to go through this. Yeah, next life I don't want to go through this. That's the lesson we should get. So it's by design. So if you are getting that lesson day to day, we should not be surprised. We are on the right path.
Day to day. Working per plan.
Yeah, by design. So by design that we are supposed to get frustrated enjoying the senses, you know, in the materialistic way.
Really there.
Yes, in a materialistic way. But of course, you know, if in a spiritual way, the same relationships can be very enlivening and help us go back to Godhead. So these people, they get afraid of that identity. No, I don't want to deal with the relationships even in spiritual world. No, so let me imagine a world where there is no personality at all. This is a fear of relationships. Fear of own spiritual identity. So you can write next to the fear if you want in Bhagavad Gita. Fear of spiritual identity.
But Mataji, earlier we have been talking about, you know, when we say fear of losing, you know, material world itself, right? Attachment, because we are attached to
material body.
Material yes. world. But here it's kind
it's
of
different, different, yes, correct, yeah. correct.
But there's an indirect attachment to the material world.
Yes.
Because
our detached. No, it's called
aversion,
right?
It's
aversion.
Yeah.
Fear of
spiritual identity. Mm-hmm. Also, it's also actually later on the purport Prabhupada says these are all coming because we are attached to this material world in the first place.
Because of the material conception.
Because of the material conception, we don't want to see beyond, like frog in the well. We don't want to see beyond this existence. So we think, oh, I am frustrated with the relationships. I can't. Does it mean there is no relationship which is pure and which is satisfying?
They think that relationship also will end.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. So that's why, because of the, they think whatever I know is my world. Is that's what it is.
But the objective of the personal form is to ensure that people understand God better than the impersonal form, right? I mean,
right.
I'm trying to understand what's the objective of the personal form. Then, if you're saying that is the cause of the problem.
No, that's so not that's cause of the problem. That's cause for that's problem for certain people who they, because of which they neglect the spiritual life.
Because of the material
materialistic
concept,
we
are thinking that God is personal, right?
No.
That's the first one. That's the first one, right? That's because
of
that.
The first one, the attachment is
attachment. Okay, so because of materialistic concept,
Okay, maybe
we are considering God as similar
God
body.
Also similar to our body.
Yeah, when they are informed of the personal form of the God. But isn't that the fact that there is a personal form, but it's not material, it's basically transcendental.
It's transcendental. Right? But because of their contamination, they are thinking that, okay, even if God has a form, his form is like non-different than mine. It's like, you know, how could it be different than me?
Okay.
Like that. Okay, so now we'll move on to the third one, anger, right? So that's exactly good point, Sahu Prabhu. That's why I was telling, you know, let's focus on this purport because the definitions of these terms are different here according to the concept proper this context proper this explaining what does Krishna here mean by attachment, fear and anger. That's why, you know, we should understand carefully.
In second chapter we read fear is like death is the most dangerous fear, the biggest fear is fear of death.
Yes,
but now we are changing the definition of
yeah fear. In this context what Krishna means by fear and anger, Prabhupada is clarifying again. You know, is explaining it to us. Then next, continuing four lines down, there is furthermore, there are many persons.
Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation. They become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. such people are in a diseased condition of life.
We can pause. Yeah. So that's the third category. So they are these people. No, somehow or the other they try to figure out, you know, some spiritual path. They try, they get some interest and curiosity and they try. After some time they get confused and they go to something else, they hear something, they get confused. They're like, oh, so many theories, so many these things, there's nothing. Or rather, you know, experience of some bogus.
This is exactly what happened to him. Perfectly, exactly, ditto, step by step. He was born as a Christian, he tried to become a Muslim, now he became an atheist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they try to see, you know, maybe this is pure, when they find out, you know, everything has, is mixed up. They will, they say, you know, actually there is no right path, nothing at all, it's actually, it's void, or, you know, there's no God. Atheists or voidism.
It's kind of a spectrum is how I see it. It's like one end you are attached, the other end you are
exactly
fear, and now you are this confused, but still, you know, it's completely
Yeah, that's correct. So this anger, due to frustration of, you know, multiple paths, different paths. So if you read further down, Prabhupada nicely summarizes all this, so, you know, we don't have to be confused. We can continue the same thing actually. Sorry.
So this anger is due to the different path.
Yeah, different, you know, anger due to frustration in various paths, spiritual paths basically.
Continuing,
some people are too materially, now Prabhupada is summarizing, so let's see.
Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life.
That's the first one, attachment.
And some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause.
That's the second one, due to fear of identity.
And some of them disbelieve in everything.
Yeah, because they are angry and frustrated
at all sorts of spiritual speculation.
Out of hopelessness.
Yeah.
Two lines down, one has to get rid of all three stages.
Of material consciousness.
Attachment.
Attachment to material life. Fear of a spiritual personal identity.
No, sorry. What happened? One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world, negligence of spiritual life.
One has to get rid of all three stages of material consciousness.
Fear
of a spiritual personal identity and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life.
Okay. To get free from all the, continue.
To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by a bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of the devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead.
Okay, so Prabhupada is wrapping it up. He was saying, you know, this material consciousness results in all these things, attachment, fear and anger, because of which we'll neglect the spiritual life or all the other things, you know, because of fear of spiritual identity or frustration, right? But then the solution is, how do we get, because Krishna is saying be freed from all these things. So Prabhupada is saying, how do we get free from all of this? By taking shelter of the Supreme Lord under the guidance of bona fide spiritual master, by which we can get free of all of this and gradually rise to the platform of bhava and prema. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain this verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about the stages of starting with faith, how our devotion increases to love. I think we discussed this earlier, like starts with faith, adoshraddha, the sadhu sangha, then associate with devotees, then bhajana kriya, devotional service, then you render devotional service, anartha nivritti, then all your impurities in the heart get vanished, then you become nishta, fixed up in devotional service, then you get some taste, ruchi, and then asakti, you get some great intense attachment for the Lord, and then bhava, you know, it's the stage before prema, and then pema. All this happens starting with faith, all in the association of devotees. So we'll not read the translation, I just summarized it for you. So we'll just read last few lines. So by the slow process of the devotional service
under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can attain the highest stage, being freed from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord.
Okay, so again Prabhupada summarized it again here, right? So by guidance, following this process and the guidance of spiritual master, we'll be freed from material attachment, fear of individual identity, and also frustrations. all of this will get read and then we'll attain the prema and ultimately the abode of the Lord. Okay, so can somebody summarize? I want to make sure that. So attachment is attachment to the material body because of which?
Fear.
No, because of which they will neglect the spiritual life. They think, okay. So and
second is
fear of spiritual identity.
Okay, one's own identity. So they want to envision a world where everything is one, like impersonal. And then
confusion leading to anger.
No.
Confusion
leading to anger because of the multiple paths and frustrations of spiritual speculations. Because of which they think, you know, there is no supreme cause and they think everything is void actually. Or rather the atheists. And we can get rid of all of this by taking shelter of Krishna under the guidance of bona fide spiritual master. Right?
One thing is, if we completely believe that taking shelter is the only way, we don't have to know anything.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's true. Yeah.
If we have that faith,
yes.
That's the, I mean, don't have to understand.
Yeah, that's true.
Make an effort.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
but it's not during the happy times when you should have faith. It should be at all times when you should have faith. And I think it is during the distress when you don't have faith, is these things will help, the knowledge will help.
No, what Mataji was trying to say, which I understand, is like, you know, when we are convinced that we have to take shelter of Krishna already, then all the side benefits we'll already get it. It's not like, okay, now let me get rid of fear, let me get rid of anger, let me get rid of attachment, so then I will take shelter of Krishna. Got it? Like, you know, it's like we are aiming at the ultimate thing already. So then they say, you know, it's there in the verse in the Bhagavatam, which says, with bhakti comes jnana and vairagya. We don't have to endeavor to cultivate knowledge. We don't have to endeavor to cultivate detachment from this world. But by cultivation of bhakti, these two will come as side benefit. After some 1 year, you will find out that I'm no longer attached to certain ways of enjoyment. I'm no longer attached to going to shopping malls and spending hours there, let's say. I'm no longer attached to watching movies. I'm not about telling about me. In general, I'm some example. Right? So that then we'll realize, you know, why I never even endeavored to get rid of these things. How it's happening? Because it's happening as a side effect of bhakti growing.
Since the faith and bhakti is not there, we have to, it's like,
yeah, we have to stop, don't do this. Yes, yes.
It's like
exactly
the same,
yeah,
thing, like, right?
Exactly.
That's
why Prabhupada always says, you know, you don't change your position, you just add Krishna. Just increase your Krishna consciousness, increase your service to Krishna, then automatically, you know, of course that means you are taking room from some of the other sense gratification activities. But at the same time, you know, you feel like you are not taking away, that somebody is not taking something away from you. You feel you are making a choice to add Krishna, and then gradually, you know, Krishna will help us take.
I was thinking of an analogy, right? So, let's say you are trying to do darts and you are trying to hit the board. First aim somewhere near the board, first somewhere. So, but if you are aiming for the bullseye and you hit it, you are hitting the board and everything in it, right? Like that.
Correct. Very good. Yeah.
For me, the one difference is like your own effort is only so much.
Yeah.
And then it becomes too tiring. It's like you're doing this, doing that. But when we talk about the mercy,
yeah,
it's like you feel like you are helpless and the mercy is,
yeah,
needed.
That's correct.
That helps me.
Yes. Okay. That's very good.
They give example, Mataji, if I can just add,
yeah,
to it. Right? So they say, like, it's one of the Tyagaraja kritis,
yeah,
only he says, the plant cannot approach the sky for water, the calf cannot approach the mother for milk. The milk has to come to the calf. The water has to come. Similarly, I cannot approach you. You are somewhere, no matter how pure,
yeah,
I go, I cannot approach you. You come,
yeah,
like a child. Like,
yeah,
that.
That's correct, yeah. It's very nice, yeah. Yeah.
I can get the reference for you, but I cannot remember it at the top. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll continue with the next verse. Text number 11. ये यता मां प्रपद्यन्ते धांस्तदैवा वचाम्यहं मम वर्तमानु वर्तन्ते मनुष्या पार्थ सर्वशः. So here the connection between the verses, earlier verse Krishna says that, you know, somebody who is absorbed in Krishna will attain transcendental love for Krishna. But Krishna is saying now, no, what if somebody doesn't want my love? What happens? But he still approaches me and takes shelter of me. What happens to him? He doesn't want my love. Let's say he wants money or he wants beauty or he wants so many things. But still he is taking shelter of Krishna. What happens? Krishna is saying, as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. That means as they approach with different desires, I am going to fulfill. Like Kalpa Vriksha tree, right? Whatever you ask below it, it is going to fulfill. So like that, Krishna, whatever his desire, we come and approach him, he is going to fulfill that.
But desire and surrender both are separate things. Right?
Separate thing, yes.
But you are correlating surrender to desire.
I was going to ask something similar. So because when you read in the introduction, right, it says that, you know, we treat the Lord as our order supplier, right? It's like Lord. So I'm getting confused.
Okay, I will elaborate. Yeah. So here this is a very, very deep verse actually. I wish we can spend whole class on this verse, but I'm not sure whether we can. But it's like, you know, this verse Krishna is saying, as people, the first difference between desire and surrender, what I was telling is, desire is okay. Let's say desire is, if we just talk about desire, we are no longer talking about bhakti. Let's say I can just sit somewhere and keep desiring. Does that mean Krishna is going to fulfill that? It may not be, because it's all based on our karma at that point, right? So, but here, desire in surrender to Krishna, desiring something while taking shelter of Krishna. So that is kind of, so the devotee thinks, I'm actually surrendering to Krishna because he's taking shelter of Krishna. But at the same time, in heart of his hearts, his desire is not really to attain pure devotional service to Krishna, but something else, which is, okay, I want to have a position in temple, or I want to have some prestige. I want to have, let's say, following. I want to have, let's say, I want to become a guru with so many number of followers. Right? So, but at the same time, if somebody sees me, okay, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I'm giving Bhagavad Gita classes, Bhagavatam, so I'm taking shelter of Krishna. But in heart of my heart, this is my prime desire, to attain a supreme position within this world. Or actually sometimes Prabhupada asked, like many of his disciples, or rather he said this thing about his disciples, he said, like, actually most of my disciples are aiming for heavenly planets. So they all are chanting Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada knows, right? And you know, he gave the process to them. But he knows from within the hearts, that's their desire. They want to go to heavenly planets rather than going to Goloka because of their material desires. Right? Actually, we may feel it's so blunt, you know, why could anybody desire like that? But actually, as we practice the devotional service, as we chant the holy names, we can see Krishna reveals within our hearts how much our desire is so impure and how many other desires we are cultivating. It is said that while chanting Hare Krishna, the creeper of devotion is, we are watering, the chanting Hare Krishna waters the creeper of devotion, and that creeper has to grow, and it goes all the way, you know, all the layers of the universe, material universe. It's like, you know, we can envision this. Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the creeper grows beyond all the seven layers of the universe, goes beyond Brahma Jyoti, Vaikuntha planets, everything goes to Goloka, and you know, finally near Radha Krishna, Krishna's lotus feet, and it gives fruits and flowers there. So that means that's our love, you know, eventually it results in that. But while watering that tree with this chanting Hare Krishna, usually, you know, in any gardening we see some weeds also keep growing. So actually we end up giving water to the weeds. So we may be growing, you know, something else, which is a desire to, you know, have prestige, a position, or so many things.
Paying for, that's what you're
exactly. So the thing is, Krishna always fulfills our desires. So that's what he's saying, you know, so wonderfully he's saying, you know, as all surrender unto me, I will reward them. So what they, while taking shelter of me, if they have some other desires other than me, I'm going to give them. But if they want me, I'll give them. No, but you know, he will put lot of tests to check whether, you know, really do you want me or something else. Because he is not going to give himself easily. That's why Krishna is saying everyone follows my path in all respects, because everyone is seeking for Krishna. So we'll try to spend as much time on this purport. So we'll read first two lines. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. So here, actually, you know, later on couple of lines, if you read, Prabhupada is telling about somebody is seeking for impersonal revelation, so they attain Brahmajyoti. Somebody is seeking for Paramatma realization, so they attain Paramatma. Somebody seeking for personality of Godhead, so attain Bhagavan realization. The three aspects of absolute truth we discussed, right? But another deeper understanding of this lines, two lines, right? First two lines. Everyone is searching for Krishna in different aspects of his manifestations. At least what I felt was that generally people, right, if you see, everybody is looking for, you know, some, exactly, some, their, you know, whole life is geared towards something or the other, either money or beauty or power or strength or fame, or sometimes it's renunciation. They are all seeking for this, but who is the one who possesses this in full? Bhagavan Krishna. So actually, in a way, they are seeking for Krishna. They want to get the taste. And the taste is nothing but taste of Krishna, actually. They don't know, but they are seeking in this material ways. So if you go deeper, actually everybody is seeking for Krishna. Right? Yeah, everybody is seeking for Krishna. They don't know it's Krishna. But eventually, if somebody wants to become very, very wealthy, right? They attain certain level and say, okay, this is not enough, I want more, I want more. If they go on like this, they'll figure out, actually, you know, I have to become Krishna to become like, being satisfied. Then they say, okay, then why not serve Krishna? It's like, you know, how Sankhya Yoga, right? He researches, where is the root, where is the root? We discuss that, he will find out, you know, okay, this is, where is the source of this, where is the source of this? They do research of this material world to figure out where is the ultimate source. Then finally they figured out, okay, there is some Krishna called somebody who created this. But we don't need to do research, right? We know. Krishna created all this. So that's why Bhakti Yoga is not about analysis, analytical.
Mataji, I have a question. This whole concept of reward here is confusing me a lot. Right? So far, I mean, it was all about not, you know, wanting rewards or, you know, just having your... You focus on Krishna and that's,
yes,
know,
correct.
Desires the, yes, desire for Krishna instead of, you know,
other things.
And
yes.
And lust for the world is actually lust for Krishna instead of lust for the...
Yes, correct, things, correct,
right?
Yes.
So if I'm actually going to go and, you know, worship Krishna for, and I have in my mind the lust for something else, and Krishna is going to reward me for it, it's not, it doesn't seem right. I mean, doesn't help me break from my lust for the...
Exactly, correct.
So
first
so
of all, okay,
why
one...
Why does Krishna reward me for... something that is going to keep me connected to the material world? I only go to him for those things. Why should he reward me at all? Like, I mean,
okay. So one clarification is, what's I put to say? Okay, I missed that. One thing is it doesn't mean that is the recommended way. Okay, that's one clarification. Where Krishna is saying, you know, as all surrender unto me, I'll reward them accordingly. That means, you know, people come with various desires, I'm going to fulfill them those desires. This verse doesn't mean that actually people should go to Krishna with those desires. The earlier, as you mentioned, right, we always said, you know, just love Krishna, don't, you know, give up this lust and all. That statement still remains. That we should actually go to Krishna only with the pure desire to serve him. That's the, you know, that's the desire we should have, ideally. But there are people who are not at that stage, but still, is it, do you think, you know, it's better to worship Krishna rather than worshipping some, you know, demigods or worshipping some man-made power or some hero or heroine or somebody with, for that, those desires, right? And compared to all those other options, better to worship Krishna, because he is the one who is giving them through others also anyway, right? And Krishna says later on, actually, why it's better to worship him. But then, just because we are worshipping Krishna, but because of his love, even though our desires are not pure, he is going to fulfill that, because that's how a father is. No, but the thing is, maybe it may, by frustrating us in our desires, that may not be always the right way for us to make progress. For some people, it may be. People who are already ready, they're at the brink of, you know, I'm ready to give up, but still they hold on. Let's say, you know, oh, I still want...
But that is not surrendering. The whole trouble I'm having is, it says, as all surrender unto me. Surrender basically means you have given up, means it's surrendering. I reward them accordingly. So I haven't surrendered if I still.
But the thing is, see, that's the thing. The surrender is a spectrum. Because we are not at full surrender, right? That takes ages for us, or rather, you know, so many.
Yeah.
See, right now I can say I'm surrendered, my husband can say he's surrendered, you all can say you're surrendered. But is there a difference in all of our surrender or no? It's there, right? Hopefully it's there, or you know, what to say. Or maybe somebody else, somebody at very, very advanced, right? Maybe Harivilas Prabhu or, you know, Prabhupada, let's say. See, all the spectrum of people, everybody can say I'm surrendered. What's the difference is the amount of energy we are putting in Krishna versus the amount of energy we are putting in Maya. That's where the balance is shifting for different people. Some people more on this side, less on this side. Like that, right?
Mm.
That's the only difference. Everybody is surrendering, but they are in different stages. So all these people, even with this material desires, they are also surrendering because they are taking shelter of Krishna. Like initially when I started, right, I remember that so many material desires and so much contamination, so much in passion, everything. But still, out of my heart, I wanted to give my life to Krishna. So that spark took me all the way, right? That pulls us away from all our desires. So this thing, and still that person, Krishna considers them also as Mahatmas because they are coming to Krishna. So like we'll read the continue the purport, like few lines down, Prabhupada is saying how in the transcendental world also Krishna reciprocates according to the rasa. So in the transcendental world also, 5-6 lines down.
Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his friend, still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with different types of worshippers. The pure devotees both here and in the transcendental abode associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service.
Yeah. So the another understanding of, you know, surrender and reciprocation Prabhupada is giving is about the rasa. So in the transcendental, so we can now see, analyze, right, how many different ways. First is about three aspects of absolute truths. Based on, you know, whether I want to merge in Brahman, Krishna is going to give that realization. Whether I want Paramatma, Krishna is going to give that realization. If I want Bhagavan, Krishna is going to give that realization. Second understanding was that, you know, everybody, materialists also who want power, fame, everything, they are actually seeking Krishna because they are all aspects of Krishna. Third one Prabhupada is telling is that, you know, rasa, transcendental rasa, based on the rasa the devotee is seeking, Krishna is reciprocating accordingly. Somebody wants Krishna as his lover, somebody wants Krishna as his child, accordingly Krishna is reciprocating with them to fulfill that rasa. Okay, so going on, Prabhupada is going to elaborate and talk about couple of other, I'm just going to summarize that, other categories, which is like, for example, fruitive workers, karmis. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results. I'm reading like last few lines on the same page. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties. Karmis, they get the results. As the Yajneshwara, and those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are rewarded such powers. So even karmis and yogis, they are getting their powers or, you know, whatever results from Krishna. So we can read like last few lines. In other words, everyone is
dependent for success upon his mercy alone. And all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless therefore one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness.
We got this point, the same thing, we are talking about spectrum, right? So there are, you know, everybody is yogis, karmis, and everybody, they are seeking perfection at a particular level and they want to be happy there itself. They don't want to go beyond. But they are all, Prabhupada is saying, they are actually different degrees of success on the same path. Eventually, they all want to come to Krishna, but I am happy here, okay. I am happy with my sense gratification. Many people, they say, you know, I am so busy, you know, I am so happy. Why should I come to temple? Right? But they are also on their journey actually. Right? Someday they will come. But then Prabhupada says, unless they come to Krishna consciousness, they remain imperfect. We understand that. So that's why, you know, this verse. Even if we don't have any desire, we desire liberation, or we have all material desires, better to worship Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because that's, you know, ultimately anything, everything is coming from Him, and anyway, you know, we are on the right path if we start worshipping Him. Like, for example, somebody said, you know, I am so impure that I am going to contaminate the holy name, so I am not going to chant at all. Right? You know, so I am saying, you know, I have a lot of material desires. Prabhu was telling example, Rajesh Prabhu. Right. You know, we have so many material desires, so, you know, where are we eligible to worship Krishna then? Right? So I have so many material desires, so much contamination. Prabhu, you know, I am so contaminated today. Rather, you know, I went somewhere, I will not chant the holy name because I am going to spoil the holy name. You know, it's pure, so pure. But the holy name is so pure that even if I am such a contaminated fellow, I am going to be pure. Cured. Right? So that's why, you know, we have to approach Krishna, even if we are full of desires, without any desire, desiring liberation.
If I can add a little small story, right? I can't resist it because it's the holy name. But it's from Velukuti Krishnan Swami's Bhagavatam. So one fellow was desiring to dip in the river Ganges. And before doing that, he was searching for a little pond so he can take a shower. So a sage was sitting next, near a tree, and he was asking, "Hey, what are you looking for?" He said, "I am trying to take bath in the Ganges to cleanse, before that I want to clean myself." He asked, "Why do you want to clean yourself?" "Because it's a holy river, I don't want to do that." "So why are you taking bath in the Ganges?" "To cleanse all your sins." "So the sin of not being clean, that also will be clean, so you go take bath." So it's like that though. God's name is so pure that people do that also.
Very good. Okay, so it's very nice, right? This verse Krishna is saying, as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So the action item for us is, you know, as we chant the holy name, we should monitor what is the primary desire we are cultivating.
I can't even do that for that. Yeah, I'm mad, I don't chant. So.
Or at least, you know, in our heart of our hearts, what is that? What do I want?
One thing.
And we should always purify that desire, you know, because the test will come where Krishna is going to give choices. Some point we'll get positions, or sometimes, you know, people appreciate, or, you know, we'll get knowledge. People say, "No, you know so many verses, you can speak Bhagavad Gita so much." And so are we going to get carried away with all this? Or if so, then that's all, I'm going to remain at that stage. Right? Or do I want Krishna actually?
I mean, bottom line is, you want to attain the transcendental love of Krishna. That's kind of the objective, which is the first two.
Exactly. So, but sometimes, you know, while doing devotional service, we forget that.
Yeah,
we forget that. We forget that's the goal. We get stuck with, you know, okay. Because bhakti is so powerful, it gives so many material benefits. Material side effects. There are six side effects of bhakti. Six symptoms, or rather, what is it? Side benefits of bhakti. No, it gives Shubha the auspiciousness. So initially itself, the beginning stages itself, we'll start feeling relief from material distress and auspiciousness and happiness. All these things come. So the problem is, you know, with all this happiness, we feel we get situated so much in mode of goodness that, you know, life becomes so easy actually. Family is happy, husband is happy, wives are happy, you know, kids are happy. No, oh wow, so nice, I can still remain here, right? So then we get attached to mode of goodness and, oh, what's the problem? I can stay here. So that's the thing, you know, bhakti gives so much this. But then you have to go beyond that, you know, I don't want to still stay here. So once in a while Krishna gives some pinch here and there and some accident, this thing, that thing. Then we'll get reminded, okay, still it's a dangerous place, okay, let me start going back.
My mom often is on my mention. She often quotes a verse.
Yes.
beautiful. Like it basically says, for those who worship me, like it's 9:22, I think.
Yeah.
I give them what they lack.
I carry
preserve what
they lack, and I preserve what they have.
Yeah.
So it's kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of fulfilling, like your here is
yes.
what. Just meditate it onto me, I will give you what you
yes,
what
yes.
You don't
so
have,
he gives whatever we need to go back.
The thing is what we need, not what you want. There also there's a sweet difference.
<That's>
what they lack, I think that's the right.
Yeah. Preserve what they lack. Because sometimes we may feel Krishna, I really lack this, you know. If I have this, I would rather I serve you better. But Krishna knows what we really lack, you know, what is needed for our service, as you say, you know. Sometimes
my daughter always goes to shop and says, I need this. So I was reminded of that, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, we may feel we need this. We don't need this actually. So Krishna, that's why, you know, that's why what's the purpose of going to Krishna for material desires? He purifies the desire and then gives us. So when we go to Krishna saying, Krishna, I need this bungalow, or I need this position, or I need this promotion, Krishna gives enough time that we get purified of enjoying that position or bungalow or whatever, then he gives that. Then you feel like, you know, okay, I better rather use it in Krishna service. Got it? Like, you know, we'll give the promotion, but at that time you'll not be puffed up or arrogant, or you'll be more humble. It's like, oh yeah. Or rather you feel very miserable. Why did I work so hard for this thing? I would rather spend time in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Text number 12. Kaṅkṣatā karma nām siddhim yajantā iha devatā kṣipraṁ hi mānuṣe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. Men in this world desire success in fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. So the question, the connection between the verses is, if Krishna can give everything, as he mentioned in verse number 11, right? People who can come to me for any desires and I can give them. So if Krishna can give everything, why do people worship demigods? So that's the connection. Krishna is saying people, they still approach demigods because they want it quickly. Krishna gives after purification. It may take some time or even some janmas. But no, demigods give it very quickly. So that's why people who are restless for sense gratification, they approach demigods.
The demons always worship Shiva, but they never worship,
Krishna. Yeah. Demons.
All the demons, they always worship Shiva.
Shiva is Ashutosh.
Most of them.
Easily pleased.
Yeah. Or Brahma.
Huh. Okay, so where is the... Yeah, so let's read. Actually, the first section of the purport, Prabhupada explains the position of demigods. We all understood this earlier, right?
Yeah.
So, the position, demigods are empowered administrators, and they are parts and parcels of the Lord. And whatever their power is coming from Krishna, whatever they are able to give is coming from Krishna, and whatever they could give is only limited and temporary within this material realm, right? So, this all we have already read. So, Prabhupada is summarizing all those. And then that's why people who worship those demigods are less intelligent. Hrita Jnana. Less intelligent. We discussed that verse is going to come later. So we'll read like, you know, half down the purport. In this world, however, human society is mad after temporary things. Almost like, you know, 3/4 down. In this world, however, human society is mad.
However, human society is mad after temporary things such as material opulence of producing land, family, and enjoyable paraphernalia. To achieve such temporary things, people worship the demigods or powerful men in human society. If a man gets some ministership in the government by worshipping a political leader, he considers that he has achieved a great good. All of them are therefore courtling the so-called leaders or big guns in order to achieve temporary boons, and they indeed achieve such things. Such foolish men are not interested in Krishna consciousness for the permanent solution to the hardships of material existence.
Mm.
They are all for after sense enjoyment, and to get a little facility for sense enjoyment, they are attracted for worshipping empowered living entities known as demigods. This verse indicates that people are really interested in Krishna consciousness. They are mostly interested in material enjoyment, and therefore they worship some powerful living entities.
Yeah.
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification, and you know. And demigods can give that, or even, you know, sometimes they make people as gods and worship them, like movie actors, all those things, make temples for them. But key point is Krishna consciousness, they are not interested in Krishna consciousness for the permanent solution for the hardships. I just want to fix things. Okay, today I have a pain in this leg, I want to fix this, that leg, fix this. But why I even have this material body in the first place to have this pain? Right? So that's what Prabhupada is telling. Let me fix that root problem. So this verse indicates that people are rarely interested in Krishna consciousness because they are just busy in material enjoyment. That's why, you know, we have this example of diamond shop. How many people go and purchase pay the price and purchase a real diamond? But if there are any, you know, fake jewelry, which easily they can shift in different designs, make it and make it look as if they are wearing jewelry, then people easily go and buy. How many people wear gold? How many people wear artificial jewelry? So that's how, no? That's why devotees are very rare and very special. That's why Prabhupada says, you know, it's all devotees and everybody has made Krishna as their priority. So they are not at all ordinary people. Imagine, like, they've left everything, so-called material enjoyment, so-called so many things they could get from this world, and they're making Krishna as their life and soul. So they are all worshipable devotees. So very precious. So we'll go to the next verse, text number 13. Chaturvanyam maya shushtam guna karma vikavagashana tasya kartaram api mam vidya kartaram abhyayam. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me, guna and karma. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. So here the connection is, somebody may say, is Krishna? Somebody may ask, like, you know, okay, somebody is experiencing pain and pleasure, somebody is experiencing happiness and distress. If Krishna is the controller of everything, is he responsible for what I am going through? Is he the one who is the one to be blamed? There was a recent incident in our community. So some of our boys, they're old enough actually that they can walk across the road on their own in the community. So they were all, and lot of our devotees are there in our community. So, you know, nicely all the boys and girls, they play together. It's such a nice festive. They're happy. Our kids are happy. So, and that striked envy from a lot of other people. For a while it's happening. And so one lady, one Chinese lady, she was driving, and seems like one of the two boys were carefully crossing the road, but she made it a big scene and she said, you know, oh, I had to press a brake hard, and otherwise, you know, I would have killed them. These are Indian children, no, like that. She wrote a big email to everyone and made a big scene, and she called cops. Cop came, and then cop met the devotee and said, you know, nothing is like that, no, nothing. She let him go. So it's all because, you know, she had so much, and she had one son who never mixes with any kids and doesn't know who play with anybody. So she had so much envy towards us that she did all this, you know, went out of the way to do all these things. So, and our kids who are, you know, the kids, right, are trying to be devotees. So I asked them, you know, what is your reaction? And some of them were pretty, actually she came to a house and that Mataji was not there in the house. With all the kids were playing in that house. She came and she shouted at the kids. And the kids were so trembling and so this thing. They were crying, sobbing, and some of them couldn't sleep in the night. And they were like very scared. Because parents are not there, somebody comes and shouts. It's a violence. So then that one kid is little elder. His reaction was, he said, I cried out of anger. No? Why is this happening to me? You know, what mistake I did? Why? And then I asked him, did you, I wanted to go deep and ask him, you know, whether he questioned Krishna. So I asked, like, did you ever think about, you know, why Krishna is doing this to you? Or, you know, did you blame Krishna for this? He said, yeah, I thought, why Krishna end up doing this for me? So that's what, you know, eventually, somehow or the other, we don't do much devotion. that thing we don't question, how much devotion I have, how much surrender I have. But when something happens, we feel, you know, why Krishna did this to me? You know, why, you know? So that's what, you know. Then for that question, Krishna is showing here, you know, I am not the doer. I create the system, I give the rules, I give the raw materials, I give the living entities. They play around, they create their own reactions, actions. So I'm not responsible. But there is a, you know what to say, there is a program by which, you know, if you do this action, this result, that program is already there. You cannot change the rules of the program. No, so that rules we are going to act regardless. So you play with your toys. So that's why Krishna is saying, according to guna and karma, four divisions are created by me. Even though I am the creator, I am yet the non-doer. That means I don't put people in those situations. I don't say, you know, okay, now Rakesh Prabhu is going to be Brahmana. Now Vishwanath Prabhu is going to be a Kshatriya. I don't put people, force people into those situations. According to their quality, guna and karma, they are going to be in the situations automatically. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll read like first paragraph, half of it. The Lord is the creator of everything.
The Lord is creator of everything. Everything is born of Him. Everything is sustained by Him, and everything after annihilation rests in Him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called Brahmanas, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is administrative class, technically called Kshatriya, due to their being situated in mode of passion. The mercantile men called Vaishyas are situated in mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and the Shudras or the laborer class are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of his creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions, because He is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society.
We can pause this. Yeah, so essentially why we read this is I wanted to read that, you know, modes and Brahmana's mode of goodness and Kshatriya's mode of passion, Vaishya's goodness and passion, sorry, passion, yeah, passion and ignorance, Shudra's ignorance. But Krishna created all this, but he doesn't belong, because he first of all doesn't even belong to this material realm. Okay, that's clear. Then we'll read, actually, then Prabhupada goes on to say, Krishna conscious person is even above the Brahmanas, which we discussed earlier, right? He's a Vaishnava because he's transcendental, right? He's above the Brahmanas. So last few three lines, and as Krishna is transcendental to the system, last four lines.
And as Krishna is transcendental to this system of four divisions of human society, a person is Krishna conscious.
A person
in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nation or species.
We discussed this earlier, right? Like somebody said that Prabhupada's agents have been born in different communities and races and societies and everything, such that they can spread the movement in a diverse ways, because that's what it is, you know, they are transcendental to all these things. Nothing can, devotion service cannot be hampered by anything, sex or no religion or birth or, you know, caste or richness or poorness or anything. Because Krishna is transcendental, a person is absorbed in Krishna, or a person who is fully Krishna conscious is also transcendental. Okay, I think we can stop there. Say that. So to a couple of more words, we could have finished this verse.
Sanskrit translation of transcendental?
Daivi, usually it's Daivi.
Transcendental?
Divya.
Divya.
Daivi, Esha, Divya. Divya. Hmm. Divine. Okay, we pause there. Hare Krishna.